The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show. My name is Chris Stein. I'm a certified financial planner and a finance instructor at Colorado State University. I'm joined here today with Jim Solnier, also a certified financial planner. Good afternoon, Jim.
Good morning, Pete. Good afternoon.
You need to turn on your microphone, then it works a lot better. There's a little switch underneath.
Better?
That's much better.
Thank you.
Sure.
That's like a live recorded show. Yeah. When something goes wrong, we keep recording.
Yeah. I guess we could have.
Why was my mic off?
Because when I record the blog posts in here, there's less echo.
Oh, never mind.
So I shut everyone off but myself. Speaking of that, in addition to this radio show, which is also broadcast, streamed, however you want to describe it, via iTunes and directly from our website at jimhelps.com or theretirementandirashow.com is another alternative address to get to our website. In addition to the radio show, we host a blog called helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. That was the blog I was referring to. And not only do we type in words that you can read, the traditional text blog post that most people are familiar with, we have an audio blog, which we type out the information for you if you prefer to read it, but we also record a short, say, 8 to 12 minute narrative about the topic. So if you prefer to listen maybe in your car or in the background while you're doing housework or whatever people do when they're learning about Social Security, you have that option. There are some people, believe it or not, punish themselves by reading it and listening to it both. It'd be tough to do it at the same time because I don't just read the written word to you. We expand upon the topic a little bit.
We add more in the verbal than in the written.
We do. We embellish it.
We do.
We gussy it up.
Embellish isn't a very good word.
Embellish?
Isn't that something you do when you're lying? It's just a cute way of saying he embellished the facts.
No, that's like saying the person who's at the announcing the football game, there's the guy who calls the play, and then there's the color analyst who adds the embellishment. Background material, talks about how his shoes fit really well, you know, things like that. Extra. It's not necessarily a lie.
All right, if you say so.
Now, you can embellish the truth.
Exactly.
That is a whole different story. So we're not embellishing the truth. We are embellishing the information that was posted in the blog. So if you want to check that out, that's at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. All run together like it's one gigantic word. helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So I said good afternoon. That's because this is a live recorded show. We are actually recording this on November 3rd. I believe it's the 3rd today. Yes, it's November 3rd today. This show will broadcast for the first time live to the universe on Saturday, November 7th. And so we're not taking calls today. We might get to an email a little bit later. We'll see how the show goes. We've got a couple of things we want to talk about today. Those of you who listened to the show last week, you know, it was an emotional show. Wouldn't you agree, Jim?
Some of us were a little perturbed, and that's a little embellished.
That's understated. Yeah, perturbed. Irate, maybe. Very animated.
Apparently, I'm not the only one from everything that I've been seeing with this bill, which we'll get into because we're going to start expanding on the changes to Social Security, which were finalized. At the time of last week's show, we did not know what the final bill would look like. We did not know if the president would truly sign it. And that was put to rest as the budget bill was signed on November 2nd, and it dramatically changes Social Security and cuts the benefits, quite frankly, to millions of middle-class people. And that is not an embellishment. That, if anything, is an understatement.
So, but today we're going to talk about it in a less
calmer,
emotional manner.
Because Pete's not here.
Oh, is that what was driving it last time?
Last week, I mean, Pete was just, I never seen him. I mean, the man was beside himself.
He could hardly speak.
He could. He was just so upsetting. And that's why he's not here now.
I was going to say, is that why he's not here today?
Perhaps we should let people know that Pete's not here. He was so upset over this budget bill and the changes to Social Security, he had to take off from the show yet again. So I will remain perfectly calm, as I always do, and in a rational manner describe the changes that are forthcoming. You will expand upon them and add clarity to some of the words I may mispronounce.
Okay. I accept
the
job.
Typical show. As we educate our clients on some of these changes.
Well, talk about just the listeners. More people listen than just our clients.
True.
For anyone listening.
Right. Oh, speaking of that, everybody off of iTunes, our iTunians, I never told you, we did get another iTunian email.
We did.
Yes, from another foreign country loving our show. I didn't tell you about that one.
No, you didn't.
And the Belarusian.
Please share it.
Never got back to me.
Even after you sent all that swag?
Yes, I sent all that swag. So something's got to be going on ex-communist countries. They must be really bored because apparently they like to listen to U.S. retirement shows.
Are they looking for more swag?
Oh, yes.
Because maybe this is a friend of the first person.
This one's a little bit forward. The other one, this one is he or she, Miroslav Kaban.
Okay.
M-Y-R-O-S-L-A-V.
Miroslav, okay.
K-A-B-A-N.
From, do we know?
Ukraine.
Oh, another Ukrainian.
Ukrainian, yes. Ukrainian. No, the other one was Belarusian. Belarus.
When did we start? We talked about Ukraines before, though.
Well, Ukraine surrounds Belarus, or is on one of the sides.
Oh, they're touching or something?
Yes,
oh,
yes,
that's how
yes.
it was? Okay.
So I shall read.
So this could be a neighbor previous Belarusian.
It could be, but they're from Ukraine.
Yes.
They begin, hello, exclamation point. They're very happy. Hello. And I'm not saying their English is or the grammar is correct, but me and my friends really like your radio. We listen with great pleasure. Thank you for your good and quality programs. Keep up the great work. I want to receive a gift from you. They just came right out and said it. Souvenirs with your logo on memory.
Wait a minute. Did it say souvenirs again? I thought they misspelled
souvenir.
It like the last one. Souvenir. Oh, souvenirs. Yeah.
You know, back home, we say souvenir and nobody laughs.
Who says souvenir back home?
I do all the time.
You do? People just don't know you well. They're not comfortable enough correcting you because they think
they're my family.
Well, maybe they have just learned to tune it out.
Anyways, he or she writes.
Yes.
I want to receive a gift from you. There was no please.
Well, they've heard. They've spread the word now. Your last romantic encounter with the person from
Belarus. But
what
I'm trying to figure out, because he or she writes, I want to receive a gift from you. Souvenirs with your logo on memory.
Oh, they're wanting to steal your identity.
Huh?
They're going to pretend to be you.
With your logo on memory. I figured they wanted one of my little memory sticks that we give to clients.
No, I'm not sure.
You
that's
know, those little
going.
Plug-in.
I think they want to remember you with your name. They want your name and stuff on there. And then they're going to go around claiming to be Jim Saulnier. Like a business card.
Well, then they write, good luck and prosperity. Your fan, Miroslav Kaban, and then their address. I have no idea how to even pronounce this.
I wonder how much stuff these people collect from emailing all of the radio shows.
Oh, no, they listen to ours.
Oh, no.
You're implying that was copy and pasted into thousands of emails?
Probably, yes.
No.
Probably
generated
by a robot.
They're fans of our show.
robots in Ukraine are fans of our shows. Wow. Huh.
So anyways.
That's fascinating. I've never run across such a thing. It's usually an email from Africa offering to pay me money. I've never received emails from former Soviet states that are asking me for things. That's interesting.
But, you know, the Belarusian, mm-hmm. I sent
a lot of stuff.
Our bag.
Mm-hmm.
I actually sent mm-hmm. my 8x10 signed glossy mm-hmm. photo that we printed for Amy as a joke.
You realize when they get it, the emails are going to start showing about 1,200 a day.
You think?
Because they're gonna run around the village saying, look what I got. Look what I got. Crazy Americans, send me free stuff.
Right? It's a grocery bag.
I know.
It's one of those.
It's one they've never seen before, probably.
True. It's with my logo mm-hmm. on it, the glossy photo.
That's for the logo with the memory.
The map of Greeley and Fort Collins.
Mm-hmm. So they know how to find you. Right. That's great, Jim. Did you mark our location on the map?
No.
Thank goodness.
Anyway, so we did get Miroslav Kaban mm-hmm. from Ukraine. Want some swag as well, but they want a logo on memory. So you think they actually want my logo?
I thought, like, on the bag, you know, they just want it on things so they can remember you when they're walking.
I don't know
around.
If I'm going to send Miroslav anything.
Really?
I'm a Belarusian. She was nice. She didn't.
How do you know it was a she?
I don't know. He or she, the Belarusian, they didn't say I want. It was, could you or can you please send? They were much more tactful. This Ukraine person is just, they want it. What do you Ukrainian. Ukrainian, right?
Just, yes.
Cool. This Ukrainian, mm-hmm. they were just, I want. Mm. I don't like that.
Maybe that's the difference between Ukraine and Belarus.
One has manners, the other doesn't?
Could be. I've never visited either.
Anyway, so that is the only email that we received to opine on this show.
That's it? That is the only email we've received this week?
Yes.
Oh, please, listeners, please. You can do better than that. At least email us from Nebraska or something asking for things. We can't be shipping
things
all
over the country.
Will
mail swag to Nebraska?
How easy would that be compared to sending it to Belarus?
I have no idea what that even cost me. The girls didn't tell me.
Oh, yeah. Just so you know, it was probably about $65.
No.
I bet it was.
We put it in one of those Mylar envelopes, so it's not that heavy.
Yeah, but they have to smuggle it in through those tunnels and stuff to get in there.
No, we sent it through the U.S. Postal Service.
Well, do you think U.S. Postal Service drives to Belarus?
I'm sure they flew it there.
Yeah, well, they got close, and then there's all the stuff going on over there, and they have to dig through the tunnel to get there to deliver it.
No, I don't know. I'll find out from Deb how much we paid to ship that. I'll let everybody know if they're here. I'll find out.
It's like sending something to Nogales.
I don't think they're smart enough to know not to shell out $65 to mail something to Belarus.
I don't know.
No, we're talking about trying to have a more efficient and profitable practice. Shelling out $65 to mail a bag to Belarus is not a way of doing that.
Well, you haven't seen the receipt. I guess we'll find out later.
Well, this Ukrainian isn't mm-hmm. going to get anything.
Well,
okay, so what we want to chat about mm-hmm. on today's show, we're going to begin, and we're going to have updates of this all over our helpwithmysocialsecurity.com website. But what we want to begin, we're going to break down the changes, not all on one show. That could bore the heck out of people.
Mm-hmm. Plus, it'll get you all riled up again.
It'll get me all riled again. So in a very calm, rational, realistic manner, we're going to describe the changes over the next few shows. Okay. We're going to begin with a few small items, but we're going to begin with one item mm-hmm. Today, and then next show we'll cover another item and so on and so forth. Does that sound like a plan?
Sounds perfect.
Okay, so the first thing I am looking for is right here. Okay, so what we want to bring everyone up to date on is the law changing, dramatically changing and cutting Social Security benefits for quite literally millions of people was signed into law November 2nd. That means a good portion of the changes, which we will be discussing probably in next week's show, the part that starts in 6 months, will take effect in early May of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
The part we're going to talk about today...
Not a lot of warning on that first one.
The one we're going to talk about today, that's why we want to cover it
the
today.
The one today, there's more warning.
The one today takes effect right away.
But it's about something that they can't do for the next 4 years.
Correct.
But Yes.
But it takes effect now. The grandfathering is a little bit better than the grandfathering of the other one.
Yes.
One thing we want to point out, because there was a lot of uncertainty, as the bill went through the House, there was no grandfathering in the original bill. And it was going to literally cut the spousal and child and parental, if it applied, benefit of millions of people. Just stop it. It was going to stop it. So the Senate did put in a grandfathering clause. And I want to talk about that a second, Chris, because a lot of people feel they don't want to contribute to a Roth IRA. I know I'm kind of turning this 180 here. Because they'll say to us, oh, they're going to change the rules. They're going to tax Roths later or subject Roths to required minimum distributions or close them. And I say, absolutely, I see that happening someday. All the more reason to take advantage of Roths now because they will grandfather. And that's exactly what they did in this bill. I don't believe in this with this bill at all with what they did. And I think last week's show proved that. However, anybody who was playing by the rules and had currently filed for a lot of these claiming strategies that were created with the Senior Citizen Freedom to Work Act in 2000, that's what brought all this to the forefront, was that act passed by the Bush administration in 2000. Anybody claiming under those rules established under that act have been grandfathered in, and their benefits will not be cut. They'll be able to abide by the current rules. So that was added to the final bill signed by the president.
And that was added just this past Friday, which was October 30th. And we're watching it on the 27th, 28th, and 29th as it made its way through the House. And weren't sure exactly how it was going to work out. But.
And Saturday morning when we had the tirade show, we didn't know because we didn't have a copy of the bill to see that that was put in. So that's why we still didn't know then. And we were saying we don't know if it's going to impact existing people. That doesn't surprise me that they put that in. They have always grandfathered. You know, 403Bs, any teacher out there knows 403Bs. 403Bs had different required minimum distribution rules. They changed that rule in 1975 and applied 403Bs to the IRA RMD rules. But they grandfathered all money inside 403Bs prior to 1975 have different RMD rules. They always grant, I can't say always, but they always have, I'm not saying they always will, but they always have grandfathered. That's why I feel Roth IRAs, again, we kind of went off track here, I do, which is no surprise, but if they ever did change the rules of Roths, subject them to required minimum distribution, make earnings taxable, say no more contributions can go in, no more conversions, whatever, if they ever change them, people with them will be allowed, in my opinion, they will be grandfathered in. So I want people to know that. I don't agree with this law they recently passed changing Social Security, but they did grandfather those in it. The problem is those who were planning on using these are those who are just a few months away from being able to use these. They could be the proverbial SOL, and they're the ones who are going to be impacted by this, as well as everyone else who are just in their late 50s, early 60s, and not quite eligible for Social Security, but we're hoping to use these benefits either to be able to retire early or be able to optimize and receive a little more income as they waited for their benefits to grow. They're going to be dramatically impacted. The other thing I want to point out, which to me, you and I laughed at this, I think it's Orwellian doublespeak, you know, from that movie 1985 or 1987. What was
84.
It? 84. I was close. Yeah. And it was that, a book.
That book
not a
from
movie.
The 80s, yeah, right? Yeah.
But remember they called it doublespeak. Wasn't that doublespeak? Or is Orwellian doublespeak from that Night of the Living Dead thing in the 30s?
No, I think it was from 1984. But I think
it,
so.
Yeah, doublespeak, he called it in there, didn't he?
Yeah.
The author. But it wasn't Orwell. Orwell did the Night of the Martians there. I'm kind of mixing
you're
two
all
things.
Over the place here.
Didn't George Orwell write that? No, didn't he do the radio show that scared people in the 1930s that some Martian was landing and invading the Earth?
Yes.
Okay. He didn't write the book 1984.
No.
So it wouldn't be Orwellian doublespeak. You
well,
see,
how about if you,
I
how
muffed
about if you
up and you didn't even
move
pick
on
up
from
on
this,
it.
And I'll look up where that was originated.
Doublespeak?
Orwellian.
Well, Orwellian speak. Came from George Orwell.
I realize that, but the doublespeak part specifically.
Oh, so Orwellian doublespeak
is? No, it
is
from, the term doublespeak probably has its roots in George Orwell's book, 1984.
Yeah. Oh, George Orwell did write 1984.
Yes.
And he did the radio show too?
He, I don't know if he wrote it. He was the one on the, he did the radio broadcast. No, he didn't do the radio broadcast. That was some other guy.
You sure?
I'm almost positive. Yeah.
Now we have to look or we're going to get an email from that guy who always corrects us.
Yeah. That was, what was the name of the radio show again? It was...
Night of the Living... No, The Martians Are Coming.
Yeah, that's not what it's called, though. It's, and Keanu Reeves, no, Tom Cruise remade a movie about it. It was...
It was the Martians. They were going to take over the
Earth.
I
know what it was about. It had a specific name, though. It's
Dawn of the Dead.
No, it's not. Why don't you move on with what you're going to say, and I'll find it here.
Okay. As Chris gets to this more fascinating topic of how we got Orwellian doublespeak, what they called this provision, it was buried in Section 831.
War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds.
And who
Wells,
did it?
Orson Welles was.
Orson Welles, not George Orwell.
Yes. I mixed those up, didn't
you
I,
did.
Before?
Yes. Yes.
Orson,
ha,
I
you
knew
made
that.
The mistake.
Well, you're all over the planet here with this. I'm not sure how we got down this path. Yes.
Orwellian doublespeak.
Orson Welles did the radio show.
And George,
George Orwell.
Orwell
did 1984.
Correct.
Yes.
See, their names are so close.
They're similar, yes.
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 Okay.
So Orson Welles is not Orwellian. It would be Orson Wellesian.
Okay, so back to what did they call it? Well, Section 831, page 71 of the budget bill, closure of unintended loopholes. That's what they call that section of the budget bill. Closure of unintended loopholes.
Is there a loophole that's intended? That's the
weird
part about
it. Very good point. As
if
there was intended loopholes.
Right. Is there such a thing as an intended loophole?
I don't think so. A loophole is something that's not
by
intended.
By its very nature is unintended.
Exactly.
So we also have redundancy.
George Orwellian redundancy.
I don't come up with these. Maybe does it form an acronym of some kind?
COUL.
The Kaul? No. Nope. Not sure what that. Why they used all those words. Because sometimes they use a strange pattern of words.
Well, technically, you're not supposed to use of as part of the acronym.
Oh.
So it would be C-U-L.
Oh, they did.
Cull.
They culled. They culled your
they
social,
culled
secure,
your social security. C-U-L.
Yeah.
Cull.
That's exactly where they... That's got to be it.
Closure of unintended loopholes.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise known
cull.
As culling of your social security benefits.
So I just thought that was ironic. Okay, so... When we come back, Chris is going to begin, and we're going to start talking. We already said that this was signed into law by the president on November 2nd. It has several moving parts to it. We are going to come back and talk about deeming and restricted benefits. We're going to give some examples of what used to be the rule and what is now going to be the rule, when this section is going to change, how it could impact you. But remember, if you are already filing a restricted benefit, you will not be impacted by this. If you are, well, you, in order to file a restricted benefit, as you'll see in the next segment, you have to be past your full retirement age. So if you're past your full retirement age, restricting your benefit, usually to your spousal benefit, if you are doing that, your benefit will not be cut. They did remove, and that would have been a loophole, they did remove the section of the House bill that would have cut your benefit. That has been removed. But what does deeming mean? What does restricted mean? What is being changed? And how is this going to impact you? When we come back, Chris will explain all that.
Perfect. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. If you have questions for us between shows, say you can't wait for the next Saturday, and maybe you want to drive the topic discussion here so we can get off this Orwellian thing we're doing here, you can always get a hold of us at jimhelps.com. That's jimhelps.com. On there you can find the Contact Us button in the upper right-hand corner, I believe.
And anybody from Nebraska who wants swag, send us an email.
It's a lot closer than Belarus, so we'll ship it out to you a little bit faster. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be back with you right after this next break. Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. We're coming back from this past break with the one of the top songs from 1935, which was 80 years ago. Happens to be the year that they started Social Security. So this is kind of our, in honor of the birth of Social Security, walk down memory lane with Ozzie Nelson and his orchestra with his hit, And Then Some. Ozzy went on to more popularity in his radio and TV productions, of course, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Little known tidbit, while the radio shows had actors voicing the roles of his real-life sons, the TV versions included David and Eric, known as Ricky, in the weekly episodes. Along with his wife Harriet, they became known as America's Family. Fascinating.
And for those who don't know why we do this...
Yeah, why do we do this?
Because we have 2 hours to kill.
Well, we could play other songs.
I know.
We could play hair bands from the 80s.
No, it doesn't tie in. We do this as a lead up on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. Now, this particular week, it's just going to be an update on everything we're talking to you on today's show. However, why we begin is, well, Social Security was started 80 years ago. So we begin by looking back at music from 80 years ago. When Social Security first started, the calculation was based on a measure they called 40 computation years.
40 elapsed years.
Excuse me, 40 elapsed years. Mm-hmm. So,
it's so confusing, we had to write a blog for ourselves.
And then that's why we look back 40 years at the beginning of the third segment of the show. And at the beginning of the fourth segment of the show, we look back and give you the number one song from 35 years ago, because today Social Security looks at what they call 35 computation years. So Social Security started 80 years ago. They used to use 40 elapsed years in the calculation, and they now use 35 computation years in the calculation. That's how we came up with 80, 40, and 35 years ago. And we do it with music because music is fun and everybody likes music. So that's why we do it, but it's all a cute little way to lead in on what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. Now, before Chris gets into the first major change and explaining how this is going to impact people, I do want to point out the cost to mail our swag to Belarus, $17.
Wow.
Not 65.
Was it on the back of a burro?
No, I believe it was airmail. It was probably on Spirit Airlines or something.
Airmail?
Well, how the hell else are you going to get to Belarus? You think they're going to drive it there? It's across the ocean.
A boat?
Nah, they don't put mail on boats anymore.
Are you sure?
Yeah. What was the last time you ever heard of mail on a boat?
Mail on boats has been happening for many, many decades and centuries prior to mail on a plane.
You think it was boat, not airmail?
For $17? I'm thinking maybe.
A boat.
A boat. Well, it would be a ship.
Is there a port that this ship would lead into, right into Belarus, or is it landlocked?
I don't know. Black Sea might be close to it. Let me look.
I don't know, it was only $17. It costs less to mail that package to Belarus than it does to overnight something to Chicago from Denver.
That's why I'm thinking it's going on a boat. Actually, Belarus is farther north than I thought, so it's actually up closer to the Scandinavian countries. It is landlocked, wonder if there's a canal that gets you out. But Lithuania blocks Belarus from touching the ocean area that surrounds Finland.
Well, I don't know, but Tina said it cost her $17 mm-hmm. to mail our swag to our Belarusian.
Oh, do you know what the capital of Belarus is?
I'm sure you're going to tell
Minsk.
Us. Minsk.
Minsk. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize Minsk was in Belarus. That's fascinating. Minsk. Mm-hmm. There's a direct road, goes all the way out to Klaipeda, Lithuania, which is on the coast. So they could take it by boat there and then a short van ride right to Belarus, and they'd be there.
To our listener.
For $17.
That's mm-hmm. pretty good.
Yep.
I okay, so wasn't 65, it was 17. Nope. Now that we've got that taken
care of. For some strange reason, I thought Belarus was south of Ukraine, and it's not. It's the northern border.
Okay.
Interesting.
But now
so
we
Ukraine
have
a, does have a...
A port.
A port, yes.
Yes, I know
on
that.
The Black Sea. And that's where I was getting Black Sea because I thought Belarus was down on that side. I was totally incorrect. It's north and landlocked. That's too bad.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if we do decide to mail something to a Ukrainian...
Why are we talking about this?
Because we started with our Ukrainian email.
Oh.
She wanted some swag.
Well, we could send it by canoe to Ukraine.
Okay, so Chris,
yes.
Why don't you get into...
The number,
deemed,
the first thing that's...
Right. Mm-hmm. Deemed benefits, what does that mean and how it's going to impact restricted benefits? And just educate our listeners a little bit about what they can expect.
Okay. Let me describe maybe... Let's start with how it was. How it once was long, long ago, last week. Right. Long time ago. Last week... When you would file for your benefits prior to your full retirement age, which for most people is age 66, though it could be as high as 67, depending on when you were born. For Jim and I, it's actually 67. So it'll be between 66 and 67, depending on your year of birth. Once you reach, or if you claim before that, everybody remember you can claim a retirement benefit with Social Security as early as age 62. So in those 4 to 5 years prior to your full retirement age, if you go in and file... You have little control over what benefit you're able to claim. And when you might say, well, what do you mean, what benefit? There's just one. There's Social Security. Well, there's lots of different benefits. There's your own earned benefit. There are spousal benefits. There's survivor benefits. There's child benefits. There's lots of different styles of benefits. If you go in prior to your full retirement age, with the exception of survivor benefits, which are treated separately, you can't control what they sign you up for. That is called deeming. You are deemed to be filing for your own benefit. And if one of the auxiliary benefits, like a spousal benefit, is higher, they will make up the difference to get you up to that amount. But you are literally assumed to be filing your own benefit, and you can't turn that down. You cannot restrict your benefit claim to something else. They're going to sign you up for what they deem you to be entitled to.
Right. And they're also going to determine the highest benefit you are eligible for.
I just said that.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. Okay. I wasn't paying attention. I was reading emails. Yeah,
apparently.
Okay.
So you
carry on.
Have no control. But long time ago, last week and prior, all the way back to the year 2000, after you reach your full retirement age, you gain control. It's like suddenly you're master of your own domain and you're able to actually decide which benefit you'd like to claim. You could go into Social Security at that time after you've reached your full retirement age and say, you know, I realize my own benefit might pay me more, but I want to restrict my application to only my spousal benefit, leaving my own benefit unstarted. And I'm going to come back to you later, Social Security, at age 70, and I'm going to switch over to that benefit, which now has grown because longtime listeners will know that the more you delay claiming your Social Security, the higher the monthly amount grows up to the age 70. You had that ability way back in history last week.
Yes, right up to, well, November 2nd. Today's November 3rd, so as of yesterday.
Well, that is, yeah, long time ago yesterday.
Right, long time ago. Long, long, long.
Now,
way,
so here's the new version. That deeming rule that we, last week or even yesterday, stopped as of you reaching your full retirement age, they have now extended it all the way to your age 70. So there is no way now to go in and file a restricted application, for instance, restricting it only to your spousal benefit, letting your own benefit grow in the background, like you could last week. That is no longer available. They've taken that away. They've essentially, literally, they've extended the deeming rule that used to stop at your full retirement age and extended it all the way essentially to 70.
Right. And think about that, people, for a minute on how that's going to impact you. You might be sitting there saying, oh, I don't get this. Why is it going to matter? Well, it matters because, and here's what irks me the most with all this, Chris. Again, they called it the closing of unintended loopholes, mm-hmm. or as we called it, CUL, C-U-L for short. The closing of unintended loopholes. Yet at the very same time, this government is saying there is a retirement crisis in this country. People don't have enough money for retirement. People need to annuitize more. They passed a rule under the Obama administration which pushed these cuts to Social Security, but at the same time they pushed to allow people to delay taking required minimum distributions from their IRAs utilizing a new insurance product that the government termed QLACs, qualified lifetime annuity contracts, to allow people to buy deferred income inside their IRA, not be subject to any required minimum distributions, and begin receiving large or relatively large lifetime payments of income later in life. And when they passed QLAC rules, Chris, they were specific and they wrote the rules in such a manner to maximize the amount of lifetime income someone could get. So there's very little bells and whistles in a QLAC. You can't get any enhancement to it. You can't leave it. You're very restricted on what spouses you can leave it to and the type of death benefit it would provide. There's no bells and whistles in a QLAC. And that was designed on purpose, Chris, by the Department of Treasury to maximize the amount of lifetime income the QLACs would pay out to you. So here is a government that says we have to annuitize more. We need more lifetime income sources. We're going to allow people to delay taking money out of their IRAs to buy these new insurance products that the Department of Treasury created. Yet at the same time, they're going after Social Security benefits in the sense that when you no longer were subject to deeming, when you waited to your full retirement age and could file a restricted benefit, the aim of that was to let your benefit grow and earn the delayed retirement credits, which is 8% simple interest, but 8% per year. So if your full retirement age was 66, which it is for most people getting ready to claim now, as you alluded to, you and I who are claiming in the future as a 67, but most people who are getting ready to claim now is 66, they could get 32% more income if they waited. Well, the whole point of the Senior Citizen Freedom to Work Act was to give more money to senior citizens who wanted to either keep working or wanted to optimize their benefit, get their Social Security to age 70. Well, a lot of people can't do that, Chris. They can't wait to age 70. Well, by getting rid of the deeming rule and applying it only up to your full retirement age, it allowed people to restrict the benefit, take a smaller amount of their spousal, while they waited for their own benefit to grow. So people, Chris, were willing to accept a little less now for the promise of more later. Without that little less now, many people wouldn't be able to do that. So the person who was going to restrict may have to start claiming their own, which will prevent it now under these new rules from earning delayed retirement credits and making it to age 70.
Right. And this, without this, essentially, it kind of, you know, there's arguments certainly on both sides.
No, there isn't.
Well, there is. But not necessarily good arguments on this one. This particular one, if you think about it, if there are two earners in the household, if you have a married couple and they both have created their own retirement benefit, the spousal benefits now, which if there was only one earner in the house, spousal benefits are valuable and they are paid to the person who never had a job maybe. Let's take those two households. One household where there's a worker, let's say it's the woman. She earned all the money, has the Social Security retirement benefit, and the husband stayed home as a stay-at-home dad his entire career. That was his career. And so he has a right to a spousal benefit based on his wife's record. Compare that to household two, where both spouses work, creating their own benefit. Well, in household one, the woman created essentially two benefits, her own full benefit and effectively half a benefit for her spouse. In the two worker, in the two earner households, they each only generate one benefit because there's no way for the other worker to gain benefit from the spousal on the other spouse. So it's almost like there's a hidden penalty. It's not really hidden. It's fairly obvious. There's a penalty for a two-earner household. That spousal benefit that should be part of a standard benefit is completely unusable now. The way it used to be usable is you could start just the spousal benefit, use it for a little while, and then switch to your own. Now you effectively have to just give up the spousal benefit completely.
Or you have to now delay taking your Social Security. You're not going to receive any help. And if you don't have enough in savings to live on, you either have to take yours earlier or stay working or something to that effect. Whichever way you look at this, people, this is a cut. This is a cut in your benefits because you were allowed to restrict, let yours grow to age 70, which is the whole point that the government wanted when they passed this rule. And then people started doing it and they have the audacity to say it's a loophole.
Yeah, I know.
They created it for this very reason, to allow people to delay their benefit to age 70. Think about this. Let's paint the picture, Chris, of a couple. Let's say the husband worked, the wife was a homemaker, which is a harder job. We're not belittling that, but she stayed home, took care of the kids, and then maybe later on in the life went to work a little, but never really paid much into Social Security, and then maybe took more time off to become a caregiver to her elderly parent. So just a typical middle class, they call that being sandwiched. You're being sandwiched between your elderly parents and your kids who still need your help. And you're being squeezed from both directions, and they call that being sandwiched. That's what they call it. Because you know, two pieces of bread, you're sandwiched in the middle.
Mm-hmm. You're the meat.
You're the meat. You're being sandwiched. Under the old rule, if the husband wanted to take care of his wife, because he's being told by people like you and I, we have to look at the surviving benefit, not just the benefit now. What's going to give you the greatest benefit into your 70s, 80s, or 90s? So he may have made a choice, and we'll talk about this next week, to file and suspend his benefit to allow his wife to file a restricted benefit to collect a benefit. Well, I know you're looking at me strange because the way I'm painting this, it doesn't quite work that way.
You're painting the picture of next week.
Next week. So let's back this up. We're not going to erase. I got ahead of me for next week. Let's pretend the spouse did work and she had her own Social Security. And we can go one step further. Her Social Security at age 70 would be greater than her husband's Social Security. Just say that that was the case. So now the couple would want to get hers to age 70. So they could have, and let's say he was already retired collecting his benefit. So when she reached her full retirement age, she could have said, hey, I need to get the largest benefit available to me, which is get mine to age 70. So I'm going to file a restricted benefit and collect one half of my husband's PIA, primary insurance amount.
Which is the spousal benefit that any worker has generated for their spouse. It's part of the benefit package that you're paying into, that you're paying for by being a participant in the Social Security system. If your spouse is never able to claim it, though, that's my point, you have effectively paid in to earn something and you're never able to claim it. That's what they've taken away. They've taken away, in that instance where you have two workers, the ability to effectively, for most people, gain benefit from the spousal benefit. So it's, you know, you nailed it on the head that it is a cut. It is absolutely a cut to quite a number of people on the total amount that they're going to receive from Social Security. Correct?
It is. I'm trying to look. I had a better example.
Oh, let me close this out, this topic.
Here it is.
On the fact that there is a grace period for this. There is a grandfathering effect here where, yes, it goes away, but the cutoff isn't until the end of 2015. You can get in under the wire as long as, and you can pursue this strategy of filing a restricted application as long as you turn 62 prior to the end of 2015. If it's in 2016 or later, if you're that young, no go. It's going to be gone. But if as long as you reach 62 before the end of 2015, they'll allow you to file a restricted application.
Technically, so when not corrected later, they'll go as far as January 1st of 2016.
Technically, because in Social Security world, the first of the month is actually considered the last day of the previous month.
Correct. So if you were a New Year's baby, you made it by one day.
Yep, just barely.
So if you fall under that, if you will be 62 by January 1st of 2016, as long as you are 62 by January 1st of 2016, you will still be able to file a restricted benefit. The main benefit of restricted benefit is to let your personal Social Security continue to grow past your full retirement age to earn 8% per year annual delayed retirement credits. So by age 70, you could have 32% more Social Security than you would have at age 66. But rather than no money coming into the family, if you had a spouse and that spouse was receiving or entitled to receive benefits, you could file or used to be able to file a restricted application to allow your benefit to grow up to 32% higher than it would have been at age 66, and at the same time collect a benefit under your other spouse or your current spouse's work record. That's what a restricted application would allow you to do. That is going away. However, if again you will be 62 by January 1st of 2016, not January 2nd, not January 3rd, but January 1st of 2016 or earlier, you will still be able to file a restricted application. But as
not then, not in January.
No.
When you're 62,
when
you'll
66.
Still have to wait until you reach your full retirement age.
Which would be 66,
right.
4 years later.
Yep.
But you will still be allowed to do it. However,
there's a lot of howevers in here.
The strategy is dependent usually on the ability of the other spouse to suspend their benefit. And that is essentially going to kill, even though you're going to have a right to restrict your application, it's not really going to be there. And we'll explain next week. I'm trying not to give too much away because I can easily get carried away in this. But the ability to do what we just described means your spouse has to have filed or be eligible for benefits. And under another major change to the rule, the ability to suspend benefits is going away.
No.
If your spouse...
It is not.
Ability to suspend benefits with the strategy we used to use is going away.
The ability to suspend benefits will continue.
The strategy
does not. Spousal
benefits
will stop when suspended.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about
that next
week.
That's what we're going to talk about next week. The ability to suspend benefits and use the strategy we described is going away. The ability to suspend benefits is not going away. However, the benefit of suspending is now more of a liability. Suspending benefits can really ruin things, not help things, the way they change the rule. I think that's a safe way of putting it. So we're going to talk about that next week. We don't want to mull everybody's mind over or mush everybody's mind over with these Social Security changes. But be forewarned, people, your Social Security has been cut. Many people who are counting on these strategies to generate income, they're going to lose it. A gentleman named Lawrence Kotlikoff wrote recently in Forbes magazine just last week on this, and his estimate, $35,000 to $50,000 less per family now under these rule changes. If they were going to try to use the strategies that were available, that the government calls loopholes. Loopholes, by the way, that were specifically created by the government under the Senior Citizen Freedom to Work Act of 2000. These were specifically written into the law, specifically directed towards middle-class Americans to go ahead, use these strategies. We're going to help you. Now, people actually did it, Chris. People actually filed for these strategies, and the government now has the audacity to say that's a loophole. People actually used them. We thought they were just going to look at them and thank us, but not actually use them. And it's going to cost between $35,000 and $50,000 per American family. So that was quite eye-opening when Kotlikoff wrote that.
For sure. So the music means we're coming up to our second break here on the Retirement and IRA Show. When we come back from this next break, we will hear the number one song from 40 years ago this week. That'd be 1975. And the most popular song from this week in 75 was originally released as a single before it was added to the Rock of Westies album. That's the hint.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about Roth conversions. It's that time of the year again.
Perfect.
Time to start thinking about Roth IRA conversions.
So we'll cover that topic when we get back from this break on the Retirement and IRA Show. Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song from 40 years ago this week in 1975. As we kind of look back at some significant years in Social Security, here we're referring to the 40-year look back. That starts with what Social Security calls your 40 elapsed years. Once again, this is the Retirement and IRA Show. I'm Chris Stein, a certified financial planner and a finance instructor at Colorado State University. Joined again after the break here with Jim Solnier, Certified Financial Planner. We've been discussing over the past couple of segments one of the major changes to Social Security that were enacted by the budget bill that just got signed into law by the president a few days ago on November 2nd. We'll cover some more changes as we go to more shows next week.
And we want to let people know if they have any questions. If you are close to your full retirement age, which would be age 66 for most people, or if you were close to turning age 62 and you have questions on your Social Security in light of these changes, major changes, we only talked about one small element. There's two more we have to cover that is going to cut this change alone, as a gentleman who wrote recently in Forbes alluded to, could cost the average American family $35,000 to $50,000 of less lifetime benefits. It's not one big check you were going to lose, but over the course of your life, if you live to life expectancy, could end up costing $35,000 to $50,000. So we're talking, it's not chump change here. Mm-hmm. It's some pretty serious amounts of cash. So if you have any questions on your Social Security, especially if you are 66 right now or will be 66, or within the next 6 months, 6.5 months, you need to reach out to us or another person who knows Social Security, because you still may be able to benefit under the old rules. Mm-hmm. They did grandfather people in under the old rules. We'll talk about that next week. But I just want to put the idea in your head that if you are going to be 62 by January 1st of 2016, or you are 66 or will be 66 over the next 6 months, or no later than the beginning of May 2016, reach out to us or to someone so they can explain to you these changes and see if you could still benefit from the old rules before they go away. It's quite possible you could benefit I can't say quite handsomely, but you could benefit under the old rules, mm-hmm. which really were very beneficial, and people really loved them. That's one reason I can't believe, Chris, for the life of me, AARP has supported this. I don't get it. AARP is supposed to be a lobbying group for people over the age of 50. And they came out not only in support of it, they fawned over it.
And I'm not sure why. Maybe there's some provisions in here that I've missed in this giant budget bill that help people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. Clearly, these Social Security rule changes harm people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. So unless they can point to some other specific things in the bill that overwhelmingly help folks in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, I'm not sure why they would have come out in such strong support of this budget bill unless it was purely a political maneuver. I'm waiting to hear their explanation, because honestly, I truly thought last week, as this was going through the House, that AARP would start to just raise a huge ruckus and rally the troops and start with the pitchforks and the torches in the streets and get the Congress to change this before they passed it. It didn't. And then when it went to the Senate, again, I thought, okay, here it is. They're gonna derail this thing in the Senate. No, not only do they not show up to complain, they showed up to add support. So
yes, if you want to hear exactly what they said, I quote from an email sent out by AARP to their members. Now, I didn't get it because I am not a member of that organization, nor will I ever be, because I don't feel they look out. They're too politicized. If they are, I'll come out and say it. I don't like to talk politics on the show, especially to our iTuners. Here in Northern Colorado, we tend to be on a right-leaning radio station called KFKA. So a lot of our listeners tend to lean that way and feel the same way. I know on iTunes it's different. But in my opinion, the only reason AARP came out in support of cutting what Kotlikoff has said in a Forbes article just last week, $35,000 to $50,000 it's going to cost the average middle class American family, this bill. And AARP comes out and sends this email, and I quote, and this is from the Kotlikoff article as well. This is an email he received. He is canceling his AARP membership, by the way. In this article, he alluded to that. This is what AARP wrote, and I quote, "This bipartisan bill took guts. And the Democrats and Republicans who passed it deserve our thanks." This from an organization that's supposed to have the best interest of people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. This bill just took $35,000 to $50,000 out of their members' pockets. And they said it took guts and deserves our thanks. They went on to write, "Tell your representative, thank you. Thank you for standing up for the American family and passing the budget bill." What the hell was stood up for? Nobody stood up for anything.
It would be one thing if this maybe solved the long-term fiscal crisis that faces Social Security down, you know, coming in the about 2033, 2334 era, which sounded like a really long time, but now we're within, what, 18 years or so of that. If it solved that, it actually, in the grand scheme of things, is a drop in the bucket as far as the budget of Social Security goes. It's not a drop in the bucket of these families that are going to lose out on these Social Security benefits for which they paid in to receive. So I guess, you know, that argument would fall flat for me if that's what they start to claim, that, oh, this is one step toward that. It's such a little tiny baby step as to be insignificant. It's not the solution. There has to be other grander adjustments that would probably be more fair, because the one thing, and I mentioned this on the radio show last week, the thing that bothers me the most is these changes are so abrupt. They are happening. Yes, there's a small grandfathering period, but 6 months? Are you kidding me? That's not, you know, you're on the verge of retiring and suddenly they're going to pull this out from under you, something you might have been planning for the last 5 to 8 years. Suddenly that's gone. You've got to turn 62 within the next couple of months, and then suddenly it's gone. there's, I just don't like the way some of this has been implemented, nor is it really a solution for anything. The reasoning was purely a leveling of choices, you know? So I'm not a fan. I'm waiting. Hopefully AARP will be pressured by their members to come out and spell out why exactly they felt this budget bill was a good idea.
I don't think they're going to come out and say that. I want to read to you or read to our listeners a paragraph from, again, this is from Forbes magazine, October 30th, 2015, Lawrence Kotlikoff. And in full disclosure, you know Mr. Kotlikoff professionally through email. You have communicated with him. We use his software for projecting Social Security. So I just want people to know that. You've been in touch with Mr. Kotlikoff. When you found an error on Social Security's very own website, you reached out to Lawrence because he kind of has an in with Social Security because he's well-known in the industry. He's well-respected. Mm-hmm. He's on PBS. He writes all the time and answers people's Social Security questions. He's featured in Forbes magazine and many other magazines. He's from my alma mater. What's the mater? He's from my alma mater, Boston University, mm-hmm. and he's an instructor.
He's an economics professor.
Mm-hmm. So we kind of know him, but I like the way he writes. And let me quote a paragraph, Chris. He writes, "I wonder if anyone in the AARP has bothered to even read the bill, which, when passed by the Senate and signed by the president," remember when he wrote this, it hadn't been signed yet, "eliminates the ability of tens of millions of retiring baby boomers to collect," and he lists everything that's being cut. "Millions of baby boomers to tens of millions of retiring baby boomers to collect," and I quote, "full spousal benefits, full divorce spouse benefits, and in many cases, child benefits, disabled child benefits, excess spousal benefits, excess divorce spouse benefits, excess widow's benefits, and excess divorce widow's benefits." These are the items, these are the parts of Social Security that are being cut. If you feel this isn't going to affect you, I get news for you people. It probably has. You just don't know it because you didn't know the rules of what you were entitled to. That's why a whole cottage industry had cropped up after the passage of the Senior Citizen Freedom to Work Act, creating software that would help people determine the best possible strategy for them because there was so much at stake here. So much was being offered. But as Michael Kitskis, who's another very well-respected talking head in our industry, he wrote last Wednesday, and again, I have to go from him. I haven't proofed his numbers. He said the thing that got this whole ball rolling was a report from Boston College, to go back to Boston. Again, Kotlikoff is at BU, Boston University. But Boston College has a research pod called what's it called again? Oh goodness, my mind just went blank. Boston College, the Center for Retirement Research.
Yes. Yep.
The Center for Retirement Research at Boston College a few years ago came out with a study that said these claiming strategies that were created in 2000 under the Senior Citizen Freedom to Work Act are going to cost $9.6 billion. That's according to Kitskis. However, as Kitskis pointed out, that's only if every single Social Security recipient eligible for the strategy enacted it. As he pointed out, not everybody was going to do it.
And most don't.
Most don't.
Because they claim maybe they need it, they can't delay it. There's a lot of reasons. So there's a significant number that don't. But those who would like to maximize their position or to set themselves up for the most reliable source of Social Security income in the future, were able to take advantage of these. And sure, there is, whenever you're getting something instead of nothing, there's a cost to that. I don't deny there was a cost to these benefits. There's a cost to the government system for all of these benefits for which we pay into the system. The way they did this, kind of in the dark of the night and without a lot of public disclosure, and just suddenly during this week, they stick in this idea that had been floated up a couple years ago by President Obama himself in some budget proposals. I just don't like how it was put in, how it was implemented, and the rationale for doing it. I think the reasoning is poor, and the implementation is even worse.
Absolutely. I agree totally. This should not have been done in the dead of the night. It came out. Congress had 36 hours. There was no public opinion. There was no taking it to the voters. There was no, not necessarily taking it to the voters as a ballot initiative. I mean, House members, because the bill originated in the House. There was no House members taking it to the constituents, trying to find out from them, would you support this or not? There was no explanation. It was passed in the dead of night. Congress approved it within 36 hours, and it was jammed down the throats of the American people.
And honestly, most Congress people
probably
have
even
no idea how Social Security even works.
Not even close.
So when they were talking about these benefits, they didn't even know what they were for the most part. Because most, and the reason I know that is the general public really doesn't know, and I've had conversations with people that are in governmental positions, and they know very, very little about how, other than just basic information of Social
but
Security,
it's sad
how that works.
Because AARP knows how Social Security works, because if you go to their website, it's full of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And it's sad that an organization that is supposed to stand up for people 50 and over is so politicized to the left. They are so left-leaning. It shouldn't be AARP, American Association for Retired Persons. It should just be AALRP, American Association for Liberal Retired Persons. Because they are so far to the left, they can't go against this president and what he put in. But I am telling you, and I hate politicians from both sides of the aisle, but I am telling you, if this was a Republican president, I can pretty much bet I'd put $1,000 on this if Vegas would take those odds that AARP would have came out screaming, Chris. And if they would have came out screaming, this would have never passed. This would have been removed in a heartbeat. But when you have an organization that's supposed to stand up for people over the age of 50, that's supposed to stand up for people on Social Security and Medicare, that is supposed to stand up for elderly people and help them maximize the societal benefits that they're entitled to, when you're have, they didn't say in their email why they support it. They just said this was a great deal. They didn't say because of this, this, and this. They just said it's a great deal. Thank everyone. And that's what bugs me the most. We have to stop being blinded by partisan politics. It is killing this country. It irks me to no end. A right-leaning person thinks the Republicans can do no wrong. A left-leaning person says the liberals can do no wrong. And the fact of the matter is, both parties have been screwing us for over 200 years, and we're just dumb enough to not even see it.
Well, now it's turning into last week's show.
Now I'm getting going. So right. Let's bring it down to Roth IRAs.
Let's go to Roth conversions.
Okay, but we did want people to know this is going to impact millions of you. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to get the word out. Go to our blog, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. We're going to be addressing this. Justin in the office wrote a wonderful article that's going out in our email newsletter. If you don't have our email newsletter, people, and this is iTunians or people in Northern Colorado, go to jimhelps.com. Right in the upper right, you can't miss it, is a place that says sign up for our email newsletter. We don't share your email with anybody. We send a monthly newsletter. That's it. We don't call you. We don't pep you with anything. But this month's article, and we write a new article every month with some personal financial topic in it, financial planning topic that pertains to retirement. Sign up for our email newsletter. Read the article that Justin recently wrote explaining a lot of this. Go to our blog, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. We're going to be blogging on that for the next few weeks, also explaining more. Let me tell you, people, this has impacted you probably more than you know. And again, according to Kotlikoff in his recent Forbes article, $35,000 to $50,000 for the average American family is going to be lost because of this bill. If you belong to AARP, I would cancel my membership. I would write to them and say, shove it. Because they're not looking out for you. It's all politics. Or write to them and say, why did you do this to us if you like the discounts and you don't want to give it up? But more importantly, not just AARP, get a hold of your congressman, find out, and congresswoman, find out how they voted. And ask those who voted, why did you vote to cut my Social Security? Because that's what they did.
So what's a Roth conversion, Jim?
I was on a roll, and I promised I wasn't going to get into a tirade. Okay, why is this Roth conversion season, first of all, Chris? Why do we call the holidays Roth conversion season here on the radio?
Well, a simple rule is that if you want to do a Roth conversion, which we'll describe what that is in a moment, but if you want to partake of a Roth conversion that will count in the year 2015, and this is a tax situation, so we're talking about the tax year 2015, you have to complete the Roth conversion. Well, let me step back one step. You have to... Well, I guess they consider it completed, so I can use the word complete. You need to complete the Roth conversion by December 31st of 2015.
You need to start, which effectively completes.
Yes. So I caught myself. I was speaking regular English, and then I thought, okay, tax English, which is a different kind of English.
No, you were 100% correct. You need to start, which completes it.
Yes.
The act of starting it completes it, and exactly. We'll talk about that. We'll explain to people what the heck it is we're talking about. But in light of all this Social Security stuff, in fact, of them cutting your benefit, Roth conversions are becoming more and more crucial to a sound retirement plan. We are embracing this. We've always embraced it in our office, mm-hmm. but we are truly embracing it in our office in the sense we're bringing in a CPA on board in-house or an enrolled agent, one or the other. We're going to bring an enrolled agent in-house and begin trying to demonstrate and show clients. An enrolled agent, for those who don't know, is a person who is licensed by the IRS to complete personal tax returns, and they are also sanctioned by the IRS to represent individuals in an audit in front of the IRS. So an enrolled agent and a CPA are the two professionals that we look to for doing tax returns. They're both very knowledgeable on tax returns. A CPA gets into public accounting and a lot of the things that businesses will do and comptrollers and things of that nature that get beyond enrolled agents. Enrolled agents look more at personal tax returns only, although some will do businesses as well. But what we're trying to do and what we're going to start blogging on our Social Security blog, we're going to start showing when we have our YouTube channel up and running, which is coming on board in 2016. Chris is really excited for that because everybody can now see him. He is the best looking of everybody on the radio show.
Yeah, I always dress up nicely for the radio
you do.
Show
you
too.
Always have the same outfit, which is generally jeans and one of those, what are those, polo shirts? Yes.
Doesn't I have matter. Polo shirts in every color.
Yes. Dead of winter and you have a polo shirt on. It's pretty weird.
Well, that's what coats are for.
Yeah, and then you put a coat over it. Mm-hmm. But polo shirts. Chris is always, kind of like Hillary Clinton is always in pantsuits, Chris is always in polo shirts.
True.
You and Hillary have something in common. Yes.
Okay.
You always wear the same clothes.
It's not the same clothes.
Polo same shirts and pantsuits. Have you ever seen that woman in anything but a pantsuit?
I don't really pay that much attention, actually.
And I haven't seen you in anything but a polo shirt.
Okay.
Okay. Tax optimization of Social Security is going to be important. And people need to look at that, Chris. And a lot of CPAs and a lot of enrolled agents and a lot of people who do their own taxes don't pay enough attention to the taxation of Social Security later in retirement. They don't understand what is called provisional.
Mm-hmm. Provisional income.
That's a mouthful. Provisional income. Mm-hmm. And how the measure of provisional income will subject your Social Security to taxes. And there is a way to actually collect less Social Security. In other words, turn Social Security on earlier. You collect less Social Security and pay more in taxes on it. Then optimizing your tax strategy where you can collect more Social Security later and pay less taxes on it. You'll pay less tax on Social Security and collect more of it if you do things right. One of the things to do is begin converting IRAs to Roth IRAs because Roth IRAs are removed, a qualified distribution is removed 100% tax-free, income tax-free in retirement. But there's another unique thing about Roths with Social Security, Chris, and what's that?
The distributions from a Roth IRA do not go into the calculation.
The provisional income calculation.
Income calculation. So they don't count towards the taxation of your Social Security. Exactly. Your Social Security might be taxed for other reasons, but it won't be affected by Roth distributions.
If you took $50,000 out of your 401k and $50,000 out of a Roth IRA in retirement and also received, say, $25,000 of Social Security, you would have what we would say $75,000 of income. Both of them are $75,000 of income. However, in the case of the 401k, the $50,000 is fully subject to income taxes. And the way the provisional calculation is done, it will most likely subject 85% of your Social Security also to income taxes, and 15% will be tax-free. However, if you took $50,000 out of your Roth IRA in retirement and also received $25,000 of Social Security, no other income involved, all $75,000 of your income, Chris, would be 100% tax-free.
So, the bottom line, taxes are an issue.
Taxes are an issue. And in light of the fact that the government cut your benefits, as we have alluded to in the previous two segments, understanding how the taxation of Social Security works is crucial. And one of the best ways to avoid taxation of Social Security benefits is Roth IRAs, not municipal debt. Many retirees throughout the nation will buy municipal bonds, and if you buy the municipal bonds of a taxing entity or a municipality in the state in which you live, you will pay no federal income taxes and no state tax income taxes on the interest those bonds generate. However, tax-free municipal bond interest does subject your Social Security to taxation. Roth IRAs are much better. They're 100% tax-free and won't subject your Social Security to taxation. So that's why we fully believe in working with pre-retirees. If you are over 59 and a half and under 70 and a half, you really should talk to us or another qualified retirement planner, because they can show you how starting to position your provisional income now could give you tax-free money later.
Right. And that's all related to the Roth conversion idea. So we'll talk more specifically about how Roth conversions happen and why you need to look at it this time of the year if you want to get it done this year. When we come back from this break, we're going to hear the number one song from 35 years ago. And that number one song is by the only artist ever to receive an Oscar, a Tony, an Emmy, and a Grammy over their professional careers.
Carrot Top?
So we'll... Carrot Top. Possibly. We'll find out when we get back from this short break here on the Retirement and IRA Show. Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show, our final segment of this show. That is, of course, the number one song from 35 years ago this week, back in 1980. That's 35. It is 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that artist, as we teased before the break, is the only artist to ever have received or won an Oscar, a Tony, an Emmy, and a Grammy. Not all for the same behavior. Those were all for different things. But
that's kind of like that horse who just won the Belmont and the Triple Crown. I don't follow racehorsing, but he just won something and then won something again. So she won four things and so did the horse.
Are you calling
me that
Barbara Streisand a horse?
She's got a nose like one. But does she have a big nose? Isn't that what she's known for?
I don't know.
Like a horse nose? A big nose. Isn't there a horse who just won?
She's
like,
very talented.
She is extremely talented, but so is this horse.
Why are you so fascinated by this horse?
Well, I mean, she won four awards that mm-hmm. I just saw in the news that the, I don't know where the, I think it was some race that was just this past weekend. Mm-hmm. Some horse mm-hmm. won it.
Yes.
And he's the same one that won the Kentucky Derby and two other races. So mm-hmm. he went out in style, they said. He won the Triple Crown.
Did they put him down or something? What do you mean he went
out? No, now he's going to become a stud. That's all he's going to do. He's got a life of luxury if you're a guy now.
What?
They're going to stud him out to make little baby horses.
Can't they just clone him or something?
I suppose they could, but no, they're going to turn him into what they call a stud. You wouldn't
American
know
that. Pharaoh.
American
right?
Pharaoh.
That was
okay.
One. Yeah.
So what did he win?
Whatever was just this weekend.
Belmont, wasn't it? No?
Breeders' Cup?
Breeders' Cup. Okay.
Maybe? I don't know.
And then he won.
I don't really follow the horse
scene. I don't
scene,
follow it either, but it was on TV.
Which is kind of strange since we're here in Colorado.
That he won three races, and he just won a fourth, and now he's retiring. And Barbra Streisand won four awards. So
she's not retired, I don't think.
No, she could. She could start herself out.
Triple Crown winner American Pharoah's last race drew the highest TV rating in two decades. Fascinating.
Wow. Fascinating.
Huh.
So what race did he just win?
The Breeders' Cup Classic.
Okay.
But he was also Triple Crown
which
winner,
is?
Which is the
Kentucky Derby?
Belmont Stakes. And that other one, Preakness, isn't it?
How do I know?
You're the one who brought it up. You're so fascinated by horses.
I'm not fascinated by horses. Just Barbara won four awards. The horse won four awards.
The Triple Crown is Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes. Yeah, just what I said.
Okay, and then the Breeders' Cup. So he's a pretty damn good horse.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'd think
and
so, yeah.
And she's a really good singer and talented actress.
Yeah, obviously.
Because she won a lot of things as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She probably has enough money to buy that horse.
Mm-hmm. Can she do a Roth conversion, though?
She could. You
really?
Need not have a job.
A person of her stature.
Absolutely.
Age and income can actually
Absolutely.
Do a Roth conversion?
Absolutely.
What are the restrictions for doing a Roth conversion, Jim?
None.
Pretty much. That's true. Right?
Absolutely.
There used to be.
Used to be.
Not anymore. People were...
So why would you want to do a conversion?
That's a
good conversion
question.
Is the process of taking an existing IRA, which in the last segment we have alluded to, will be subject, or will possibly subject, your Social Security to taxation. And it's not by a very high amount. If you are single and earn more than $25,000 of provisional income in retirement, up to 50% of your Social Security will be taxed. And if you are single and make over $34,000 of provisional income, up to 85% of your Social Security will be taxed. If you're married, those numbers are $32,000 or $34,000 and $44,000. I think the first number is... $32,000 if you are married... 50% of your Social Security will be taxed. $44,000 and you are married, up to 85% of your Social Security will be taxed.
The up to is the important part because it's actually a very convoluted calculation.
It is a very convoluted calculation. What we want you to know, how do they come up with that number? $25,000, $32,000, $32,000, $44,000. That's called your provisional income. It begins with one half of your Social Security benefit. You write that down. One half of the Social Security you received the year before, you write that number down. To it, you pretty much add everything. Part-time income, consulting income, gambling winnings, distributions from IRAs, 401ks, 457s, TSP plans, 403b plans,
pension
tax-free income from municipal bonds, pension income, annuity income. You add a lot of those numbers in there.
Interest on your CD.
Interest on your bank CD and in a bank if you could get anything nowadays.
Sure, but maybe someday you'll
dividends,
get that again.
Dividends. Dividends at least. And interest from bonds. Mm-hmm. Tax-free interest from municipal bonds. Mm-hmm. Add all that together. Pretty much everything except distribution from Roth IRAs. Distributions from Roth IRAs will not be included in the provisional income calculation. Why is that important? Because it could give you 100% tax-free Social Security and tax-free income from the Roth for life. So proper planning is crucial, especially if you are over 59 and a half and under 70 and a half. We call that in the office the sweet spot of retirement planning. And you should be working with someone who's breaching these topics with you. And unfortunately, many people don't know the calculation, Chris, for provisional income and how distributions from qualified retirement accounts, 401ks, 403bs, 457, TSP, distributions from those accounts really impact your Social Security taxation. So we start to get people to understand perhaps converting, turning your IRA into a Roth IRA will make sense. Yes, you have to pay taxes on the conversion, but you have to pay taxes either between the age of 59 and a half and 70 and a half, or you're going to pay them definitely after 70 and a half because of required minimum distributions. You have to take money out of them.
Or the people who inherit it will have to pay tax on it. There's no getting it out tax-free.
No, there isn't.
It's just a matter of when.
When.
And whether it's your choice of when or it's the government's choice forcing you to do it.
Take it out on your terms, people, meaning take it out of the IRA.
When you can control it.
Right, when you have control. And put it in an account structure, a Roth IRA, that will allow the distributions to not subject your Social Security to taxes.
And also avoid all future taxes on any growth that might occur in that account.
Exactly, because Roths, you can take the money out, a qualified distribution, 100% income tax free.
Now, I want to say something real quick because I've been hearing it so often lately. There's a number of insurance products out there that are being sold with the same kind of comment about them, take money out of them tax-free. While that is true, many of these things that are being sold, instead of paying taxes, you're paying interest on that money that you take out because it's technically a loan from your insurance policy.
The cash value of a life insurance policy.
Right. So they aren't telling a lie by saying it's tax-free. That part's true. But what they're not revealing to you is that you're going to pay interest. And the interest you pay year after year after year
accrues on itself.
On itself. Here, a Roth, when the money comes out, it's tax-free, and you don't owe interest to anyone because it's not a loan. It's not a borrowing. You are just taking the money out tax-free.
I much prefer, because yes, as Chris alluded to, and the insurance companies will tell you, loans of cash value from your life insurance will not be included in the provisional income calculation.
Right, because it's not income.
Because it's not income. But you are paying interest on that, and the interest is variable, and it's relatively high. There's one policy I recently looked at for a client who, a listener, and they had a minimum interest rate of 6%, and it was adjusted every year and could go higher. Mm-hmm. So they had to pay 6% interest every year to get at their own money.
Every year. Remember that, because you say 6%, well, that's a lot less than taxes might be. Yeah, but taxes are a one-time event.
Right.
Interest goes on year after year after year after year until you pass away and haven't paid that money back.
And then they take it from the death benefit.
And then they take it from somebody. Exactly. So,
okay.
So just to be clear, there's a difference in there's tax-free and then there's tax-free but maybe something else going on.
Tax-free loan or tax-free money.
Right.
I'd rather have tax-free money.
100%.
So what we're getting at, people, is we call this Roth conversion season for a reason. In order to convert in 2015, you have to do the conversion by 2015. A lot of people get confused on that, Chris, because you can contribute. If you qualify, you can contribute to a Roth IRA, and you can put in $5,500 if you're under the age of 50, $6,500 if you are over the age of 50, into a Roth IRA if you reach certain earnings limits and you have earned income, or you're married to somebody with earned income. There are rules on who can put money into a Roth, but you have up till April 15th or whatever the tax filing deadline in April is, you have up to April 15th of the following year to put money in for the previous year. So you could put money in up to April 15th of 2016 and call it a 2015 contribution. You do not not have that flexibility with a conversion. If you want to begin a selective conversion process, a systematic conversion process, there's a rhyme and a reason to our process. We try to make sure you take out enough money every year from your IRA. This is for people if you are over 59 and a half and under 70 and a half. It's the sweet spot. But anybody of any age can truly convert, your 30s, 40s, and early 50s as well. The idea, Chris, is to take out enough money to maximize your lowest possible tax bracket. You don't want to take out more money than your bracket, but a lot of people are leaving some of their bracket to waste. So we call it, you know, bracket optimization. It goes by different names. But if you want to begin a select conversion process to begin in as tax advantage a manner as possible, getting money out of your IRA, which will be subject to taxes and penalties and required minimum distributions, and start getting it into a Roth IRA, we have to do it by December 31st to call it a 2015 contribution. Now, all too often, Chris, people fixate on the unknown, and they fixate on, oh, God, I don't know how much I should convert, Jim. I don't know what my deductions are going to be. I don't know if I'm going to get a bonus, and my bonus isn't going to come in until right to the end of December, and that bonus could push me into a higher bracket, and I don't know what to do, and I have this $300,000 IRA, Jim, and I don't know how much I can convert. How much should I convert, Jim? Do you know what I tell them?
Convert it all.
Convert all $300,000. Just go for it, man.
And then we pick them up off the floor when they think about the taxes owed on such a conversion.
Just convert it all. They're thinking, well, that's 40% taxes. I don't care. You shouldn't care either. Just convert it all. And I am totally serious, people. I'm not being facetious. Because the government says you have to convert by December 31st, 2015, to put that conversion on your 2015 taxes. However, they give you to October 15th, 2016 to undo it. Mm-hmm. It's called a recharacterization. So let's just say in my little facetious example, someone does have $300,000 and they don't know how much they can convert. Should I convert a dollar or should I convert all $300,000? I'm going to tell them, convert it all. I don't care. The trick is what? Empty. I'm trying to whisper you the answer.
I know. Excuse me. This is a great show because I got something in my throat while he's whispering to me. You're going to put that into a fresh, clean, unfilled Roth IRA account.
Exactly.
Its own separate, because if you end up recharacterizing or undoing part of it, it's much cleaner and straightforward when it was kept in its own little box.
Right. So when we do the strategy with people and it's done all the time, people do this all the time, we always counsel them, convert into an empty Roth. If you mingle, you mangle. That's my own little jingle. Mm-hmm. If you mingle, you mangle. We got to set that to music.
Jingle or a jangle.
A jingle or a jangle. Mm-hmm. If you mingle, if you convert into an existing Roth and then have to undo it, it's harder. If you convert into a standalone empty Roth and you have to undo it, it's very easy. That's my only caveat. So back to my example. Mm-hmm. So somebody can convert $300,000, Chris. They put all $300,000 into a brand new Roth IRA. Now, all by itself, they're supposed to pay taxes on that $300,000. They're going to get a 1099 that's sent to the government to pay taxes on that $300,000. But now they sit there and they start doing their taxes. And lo and behold, they shouldn't have converted $300,000. Anything more than $5,000 pushed them into a higher tax bracket. They converted $295,000 too much. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem?
It's not a problem.
It's not a problem. Because you call me, you call your custodian, you call whoever you converted with. And say, you know what? I'm doing my taxes. Now it's already February or March of 2016, maybe April 12th of 2016. You're doing your taxes and you're like, oh my God, I can't afford to pay taxes on $300,000. Anything more than 5,000 would have pushed me into a higher bracket. I should have only converted 5,000. What you do, people, is recharacterize. We prefer undo. Recharacterize is like 18 letters long. Undo is 4. Very easy. And when you hear it, you know what it means. It means you've undone it. What you do is you move, in my example, $295,000 back to an IRA, leaving just $5,000 in the Roth. And that's all you do is declare $5,000 on income, pay the taxes on that $5,000. The other $295,000 is back into an IRA as if it never left. Right. Now, that's an extreme example. More often than not, we'll convert, we'll ask people, how close are you to your bracket? We'll look at their income. We'll look at their deductions. Are they itemizing? Are they taking the standard deduction and personal exemptions? And we can come fairly close with how much you can convert. Maybe it's $23,000. We'll tell people convert $30,000. Just in case.
The point is you overconvert. I like your example of scooping the sugar, where when you're baking and you want a cup of sugar in your cookies, you don't try to dip the scoop into the sugar bag and get exactly the one cup. You overfill. Excuse me. Having throat
trouble
issues.
Talking.
Yeah. You overfill that one cup measuring cup. You just scoop in and you say, I don't care if it's extra. It doesn't matter. I'm going to scoop the whole thing in there. I'm going to get it as full as possible. And then I'm going to take my straight knife and I'm going to scrape what I really don't want right off the top and put it back in the bag. And then you've gotten exactly one cup. And the point here, the one cup in this example, is the exact amount of conversion that you would really want to make if you knew your whole tax situation.
And nobody knows that till the following year.
And you don't know your full tax situation until April 15th of the following year. So this is a very slow motion scooping of sugar. By December 31st, you're going to overfill the scoop. And then you're going to hold it there waiting until April 15th or whenever it is you file your taxes. And during that filing of taxes, that's the scraping the excess off the top. You discover what that is, and we pour the excess back in the bag like it never came out in the first place.
Exactly. And that is the analogy I have used for years. Thank you for bringing that up. I forgot that analogy. People like that because they can visualize it. Now, here's the key. Here's another key. All too often, people wait, Chris, till the very last minute. The
holidays get there. You got Black Friday. You got all your shopping and everything. And suddenly, now it's December 27th or 28th. And you're like, oh, I forgot to convert.
Right. You cannot convert after January 1st, after December 31st, rather. Beginning January 1st of the following year, that conversion will go on that year's tax return. And you could miss the optimization of 2015. So the key is to start converting now. However, if you wait to the very last minute, one of the little known facts of conversions is they can be done as a 60-day rollover, a recharacterization, the process of you scraping your tax knife across your cup of Roth conversion. The process of scraping that across, the recharacterization, cannot be done as a 60-day rollover. It has to be done as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. But the actual conversion can be done as a 60-day rollover. What the heck does that mean, Jim? I'm confused. Here's what a 60-day rollover is. It's when you call up your IRA custodian and say, yes, I have a $300,000 IRA with you. I'd like you to send me a check for $300,000 and close the IRA. That's a 60-day conversion, rollover, which will become a conversion.
It's the start of one.
It's the start of one. The IRA custodian, first of all, is going to say, huh?
Are you sure?
You sure? There, no taxes will be taken out. No penalty will be assessed, even if you're under the age of 59 and a half. They will cut you a check for $300,000. Again, I'm being facetious, people, with this $300,000, but I'm trying to make a visual here. And you will receive a check in the mail made out to you. If it was Chris doing this, it would say, Chris Stein, $300,000.
Nice.
Now, Chris has 60 days to deposit that check into his checking account, write a new check to the Roth IRA custodian, and redeposited into the Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. But when was the conversion done, Chris?
Well, that's the strange thing. The conversion is considered to have taken place when the money left the original custodian.
Exactly.
Even though it might have sat in my account for 59 days, the conversion actually took place back when it left.
So if Chris did this on December 30th, called up his IRA custodian and said, send me a check for $300,000, and they did that day. So he did it before the end of the day, and they cut the check on December 30th, and the money left the IRA on December 30th. The conversion took place December 30th, 2015. Even if Chris didn't get it back into a Roth IRA until February 10th, 2016, the conversion took place December 30th. A conversion takes place when the money leaves our IRA. I don't recommend this strategy because the government cracked down on 60-day rollovers. And if you mess it up, you're going to get in trouble. You're only allowed to do one rollover every 365 days per person, not per account. So if you've already done a rollover over the previous 365 days, you cannot do this strategy. Right. But if you didn't do a rollover, it is a quick, easy, efficient way to, in a drop of a hat almost, do a rollover and a conversion, rather.
It's kind of an emergency last-ditch
effort. It's an emergency conversion.
We'd prefer that you take the well-thought-out, pre-planned approach and do it with enough lead time that we could just do a simple trustee-to-trustee transfer, and it all kind of just happens in the background. But those aren't as immediate as taking the money out and then putting it back in manually through a 60-day rollover provision. So that's why we're just saying this.
We're
getting close to the end of the year, and there's
we're going to remind them all for the next 6 weeks. We're going to be reminding people to do this. The whole idea, guys, is to start doing proactive planning. If you have any questions on conversions, any questions on the taxation of your Social Security benefits, how select conversions can help you receive more Social Security benefits and pay less in overall taxes, especially in light of the government cutting your Social Security benefit with this new budget bill, tax optimization is important. Reach out to us. Go to our website, jimhelps.com. Schedule a coffee and a second opinion. You iTunian listeners, we'll consult with you over the phone as well. We'll help answer your questions and get you understanding how these strategies work.
So thanks for joining us again this week on the Retirement and IRA Show. It's a beautiful Saturday here for us in Northern Colorado. Hopefully it's been the same with you. If you have any questions before our next show, which I believe will be a live show next week, just contact us again through the jimhelps.com website. That's jimhelps.com. Have a great day, and thanks for being with us.
Like what you just heard? Missed some of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.